Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Chris Buchanani. And Chris, before we get started, you know what? Penn State's playoff path, it's now leading to Phoenix and the Fiesta Bowl. Maybe time to start planning your bowl game travel arrangements with State College-based Collegiate Athletic Travel. You know what? For over 50 years, they've been the go-to company for Penn State bowl trips. They've got air-inclusive packages, feature round-trip air transportation from Harrisburg, deluxe Scottsdale resort accommodations, airport and game transfers, pregame meal and entertainment events, as well as game tickets, all under the eye of Collegiate Athletic Travel's seasoned event staff, always on hand to make your bowl game travels memorable and carefree. Those traveling to Phoenix on their own, you can still get in on the line's playoff action by selecting a hotel-only package that includes all the features exclusive of air travel. Complete details and pricing, they'll be ready later this week. In the meantime, visit athletictravel.com in the coming days for program updates, or you could also call 814-238-4987. Collegiate Athletic Travel comes highly recommended by me, Chris. I got to travel with them. Last year, I went to the Auburn game. I had the absolute best time. I think the best thing is you don't worry about anything. They take care of it all for you, Chris.
Recommended by you and me, Jim. In fact, my very first experience with them was traveling out to the Fiesta Bowl after the 2017 season. We had a great time, and for me, the most revelatory aspect of it was that I'm lazy. I really hate traveling. I've probably told you before about the running joke among my castmates and friends that I start disappearing like the photograph from Back to the Future the farther away I get from Happy Valley. And part of it is like I just don't want to be burdened with all the nonsense of planning the trip. I'm one of those people who hates planning to go on vacation, but I'm happy once I get there. The great thing about going with Collegiate Athletic Travel is that you just eliminate the uncomfortable part. You just show up, and then everything else is taken care of for you. So, yeah, I could not recommend it highly enough.
Yes, I was doing the read, but when they talk about their staff helping out, trust me, they do. They were fantastic the whole way through. Anyway, let's move on, Chris. Penn State participated in the college, the Big Ten Conference Championship game. Then we had the seeding for the playoffs. Could I wrap up the weekend this way? Tell me if this is the best way to do it. They lost the game, but they won the seeding.
Yeah, I think that's an accurate way to describe it.
And you know what? Going into the game against Oregon, as that game started, it's 28-10. It looked like Oregon might be running away with it.
Ugly.
Are you starting to think the same as me? Uh-oh. There goes not only the Big Ten championship, there also goes the home playoff game.
Yeah, I was definitely concerned about that. In fact, that was something that we brought up on the obligatory pregame show before the Big Ten championship. We had a lot of very nice, very agreeable Oregon fans in our comment section. It was kind of a fun week to interact with some of those folks. And I had somebody ask the question, why did you guys even spend so much time on this? And I said, well, it was probably the most asked question that we all got in the 24 to 48 hours after the dust settled on Michigan-Ohio State was, is there an outcome that imperils the home playoff game that everybody woke up last Saturday thinking the Nittany Lions were playing for against Maryland? And so I felt compelled to explain that. I didn't think it was likely. But I said the one thing that could happen here, especially with the speed Oregon's got on offense and that fast track inside Lucas Oil Stadium, is if they run away from this and they just blow us off the field, that could be the one scenario that knocks Penn State all the way down to the 9 seed. So, yeah, I was sweating it. There's no question.
And by the way, your call about Oregon and their speed, especially at wide receiver, right on, my friend.
I can't remember whether it was on this show, Jim, or another one, because as Kevin Horn says between me and Tengwall, we're the two biggest content whores in the Penn State media sphere this fall. So I'm all over the place. I can't remember whether I said this to you or not, but the problem with Oregon in terms of the matchup for Penn State was that they can make you pay for just one mistake. And so when you were talking about cosmetic scoring and making the score look close at the end, which I think Penn State was fortunate to do in terms of being able to secure the sixth seed and stay in front of Notre Dame and even Ohio State, you looked at it and thought, man, if you make one mistake in the secondary, that could be six. And if you do it twice, all of a sudden, what might have been a respectable margin could be increased by 14 points, and it could really just be two miscues. And I think you saw some signs of that, along with, again, what we'll call some suspiciously convenient officiating, where the flag stayed in the Zebras' back pockets, that put Penn State in a position where it could have looked like that at the end.
Well, I do want to talk about the officiating. We'll get to that, Chris. But the other part to this, which I find fascinating, is it was on our show. You did talk about that, exactly the way you framed it just now. One mistake, boom, there's a touchdown. Two small mistakes, there's two touchdowns. You lost by a couple of touchdowns. It's a blowout. It looks really bad. What I found fascinating is I've had people just from the game till now talk about how Oregon just ran it down Penn State's throat. They could do whatever they want on offense, go up and down the field. Penn State outgained Oregon.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if Oregon people, even in victory right now, are saying to themselves, wow, that Penn State offense, a lot of weapons over there. They sure make you pay for your mistakes.
I think probably what they're saying is, man, we probably were not prepared for what Penn State did up front on their offensive line, because really a lot of the Nittany Lions' success, all the credit in the world to Drew Aller, who played a really gritty game, and Trey Wallace, who made some big plays for him after everybody talked down on the receiving corps all season long. But really, to me, whether it was in pass protection or especially in blocking for the run game, this was the Phil Troutwine game. That's one of my two big headlines. Although my number one takeaway from the game, Jim, and I'll be curious to hear if you agree, is that, you know, Penn State did not play clean at all in the first half, and Oregon's offense was everything it was advertised to be. Dylan Gabriel was having one of those nights where he was totally locked in. To me, my number one takeaway from that game was what we learned about that team and maybe learned about themselves in terms of the fight they showed in getting back into that game. And I walked away from that thinking, even before I knew what our path was going to be, although I suspected we might have the one that we do, I think more than ever, I believe this team can go all the way. They can beat every single team in this tournament.
Chris, that last sentence you gave, they could beat anybody in this tournament, that was my takeaway. And I'll put it another way. I was saying, who in this tournament are you afraid of playing?
In terms of, like, we get them and I say, oh, well, that's it. It's over.
Yeah.
Probably nobody other than, if I had to pick one team, it would be Ohio State, just because of the history between the two teams. But, man, they have a very challenging path to get anywhere where they would be rematching with Penn State.
Yes, and I agree. The team I would probably most not like to see would be Ohio State because of that history.
Well, but going back, it's easy to forget. I still believe they are the most talented roster in the sport this year. I think they've got the best players.
Yes, agreed. But you look around, and by the way, I really enjoyed watching this Oregon team play. All right. Dylan Gabriel, those receivers, the running backs. Boy, that's a fun team to watch play. Maybe not necessarily against my team, but I'm going to be I think they're a fun watch, Chris.
Yeah, credit to Dan Lanning, who I think is a very, very good coach. He comes from an SEC background. You know, he's in that Kirby Smart, Nick Saban, as Brandon Noble pointed out when we broke down the Oregon defense on Obligatory this week. Ultimately, the the Bill Belichick coaching tree, right? Yeah. So that guy's professional DNA could not be any stronger. I think the last few years you've seen Oregon, while they were still in the Pac-12, building their program like it was a Big Ten team, in kind of the same way Urban Meyer got to Ohio State and said, okay, we're in the Big Ten, but we're going to build like an SEC program. So when they made the jump from conferences, they were ready to be physical at the line of scrimmage and pair that up with great talent at the skill positions in a way that Washington, UCLA, and also USC are very, very far away from doing.
And Chris, which is all the more the compliment to Penn State playing the way they did and the Penn State offensive line. And Nolan Rucci, who I think all of us said, uh-oh, that could be the weak link to this.
Sure.
He wasn't the weak link.
Yeah, no, you saw in Nolan all season long that he had the potential to be better than maybe his average level of play if you mapped it out over all the snaps he took. And you understood that there was probably a higher ceiling for him to get to. And I thought, you know, best case scenario with the loss of Anthony Danka is that now that Nolan's being called upon and he understands that and he's getting more reps in games and in the week during practice, that helps him get to that level. I mean, certainly it looks like early returns are encouraging.
And, you know, just the overall game, this is probably the loss that bothers me the least. I think since that Rose Bowl against USC, when it was just a fantastic game. So, and it was also the last game of the year, no real effect or repercussions to losing the game. But I said, boy, this team played pretty well. And I feel the same as I lose my earpiece. I felt the same way about this game. And maybe it's because the next day the seeding came out so well for them.
Yeah, to that point, you're going to get a home playoff game, which is something we've all been excited for since the format was announced. And if you look at our path, it's pretty appealing.
It's very appealing. I think a lot of teams, Oregon is the number one seed, and I suspect they're jealous of the seeding that Penn State has. All right, that's it for quarter number one. Lots more to go. Stick with us.
With the postseason now coming into focus, excitement is building for a Nittany Lion appearance in the college football playoffs. Now's the time to start thinking of how to make your travel arrangements should the team advance to the playoffs to be held at four major bowl destinations over the New Year's holiday: LA, Phoenix, New Orleans, and Atlanta. Get in on all the playoff action with an all-inclusive bowl game travel package brought to you by State College-based Collegiate Athletic Travel, a national leader in sports fan travel for over 50 years. CAT's air-inclusive packages feature round-trip charter, air transportation from select Pennsylvania cities, deluxe hotel accommodations, airport and game transfers, pre-game meal and entertainment events, as well as game tickets, all under the supervision of CAT's seasoned event staff. Traveling on your own can still get in on the playoff action by selecting a land-only package that includes all features exclusive of air travel. Visit athletictravel.com in the coming days for complete details.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris Buccanani. I am Jim Galante. It's quarter number two of our show. And Chris, I want to get to some specifics about the game itself before we move on to the seeding and the path going forward. We're going to have plenty of time to talk about that also over the next 2 weeks. But the game itself, I'll tell you what, much of this game, Chris, I keep reminding myself of what you like to say. Do not confuse conspiracy with incompetence.
Don't attribute to malice what can better be explained by incompetence, which is a good rule for everything in life, but certainly for understanding Big Ten officiating.
You know what? I quoted you 10,000 times incorrectly, Chris. One of these days I'll get it right. As you say it, it sounds so much more articulate. But as I'm watching this, it is really, really difficult watching that game to eliminate malice from it. Some of those calls, let me start with the non-catch. Amari Evans. It was a catch.
Insanity.
He caught the ball, okay? There was zero doubt. Zero. And even you have the announcers who are either watching it on the monitor or watching it live, just say automatically it's a catch, okay? They don't have near the angle that the officials do. Plus, there's a replay booth watching this, getting ready to hit the buzzer if the mistake is made. How could nobody on the field or in the replay booth say, hey, wait a minute, that was a catch?
The whole sequence was a little confusing to me. Definitely there was one of those mixed signal situations where one of the officials signaled a catch, and then they went back and they ruled it incomplete. Penn State was trying to run hurry up. And it's not entirely clear to me why it didn't get communicated between the offense and the sidelines. Hey, we're not lining up where we think the ball is supposed to be snapped because we were trying to get Oregon caught off guard by going tempo. Probably there is some blame to be placed on the coaching staff and the Penn State sideline for letting that happen. But on the other hand, again, how do you just not get the call right? I thought it was relatively unambiguous that he caught the pass.
And Chris, as you described it, two different officials, one saying good catch, the other is saying not. All right, if I'm here saying good catch, the only way you could or should overrule me is if you saw something I didn't. What could you have possibly seen, Chris, to say not catch?
Again, I don't know. I am very reluctant to allege conspiracy or bias or malice. I do tend to personally default to these guys are just bad at their jobs. And when you put somebody who is bad at doing a high leverage job into the position of even higher leverage, you ought not expect better results. In fact, you should expect worse, which is what we got. I just got no explanation.
And I'm not going to go down the malice or the conspiracy. I find it intriguing that your way to defend them is by calling them bad at their job. And that's the best defense. And it is.
Okay. It's a backhanded compliment at best. Yes.
And
it's embarrassing.
And I guess, you know what? Perhaps this is just the worst team that they have. Oh, wait a minute. This is the conference's championship game. Don't they have their very best officials there?
Here's the thing. I am very reluctant to embrace the idea, which you see get circulated online and on message boards all the time. This is nothing new. That conference officiating crews understand either implicitly or explicitly who is supposed to win in terms of the financial benefit to the conference and tend to call the game to lead to that result. Now, look, sometimes I watch SEC officiating and I'm like, this is at best a half step removed from professional wrestling. So maybe it's easier for me to cast a stone at another conference than the one my team plays in. But if nothing else, the fact that that narrative is prevalent shows that having conference-specific officiating crews leads to the perception of impropriety, which in the PR world is just as bad as the existence thereof. So it is past time in a multi-billion dollar enterprise for all the conferences to chip in and fund an independently administered central officiating office so we don't have SEC crews and ACC crews and Big Ten crews. You just get officials, and it is the full-time job, not a side hustle of the people who are doing this, admittedly, very, very difficult job.
And it is difficult, and I try very hard not to go down the line, oh, the officials lost the game for you, that even if they don't even out in a game, that over time they will. But the ones that strike me, Chris, is earlier in the year. Remember, it just seemed like officials do not know how to mark the ball. They're 2 yards off, okay? Yeah. It's blatant. Those are the ones. And it's the other call that I thought was fascinating and I think got bypassed a little bit was when I guess it was Zion Tracy tackled the receiver for a loss. Meanwhile,
he himself was being tackled from behind.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I had someone say, well, they would have declined the penalty anyway. It was a tackle for a loss. But before he even made the tackle, the offensive player was essentially on his back.
Yep.
Call it blocking in the back, call it tackling, call it holding, call it what you will. But it was blatant and right where the ball was. So, again, I just don't understand how those are missed. And I hope I have enough credibility to say if the call went the other way, went for Penn State, I would still question it. You know, the ball that Omari Evans
would at
caught,
least admit that we got away with one if right. Nolan Rucci was tackling a dude from behind as that guy was making a tackle. Right. Like you would, at the very least, you would say like, well, I'm glad we didn't get flagged, but that was pretty much the definition of holding or doing something illegal. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy to me. The two biggest ones that really stuck in my craw were, first of all, you can't miss that illegal man downfield penalty.
Yes.
Turns into a touchdown. That's been a point of emphasis at the professional and collegiate level for years now because of the RPO. So it's nuts that you missed that. That's just terrible, inexcusable. You shouldn't do that in the first game of the year against an FCS opponent. You sure as hell can't have it happen in a nationally televised conference championship game. That's crazy. I also kind of have a problem with them not throwing the flag on the dude chucking Drew Aller 3 seconds after the whistle. Now, look, I'm all for, like, you know, just play the game and, it, let's not take the toughness out of football. On the other hand, if you're going to hit us 4 times with 15-yarders, which, by the way, we earned more or less. I mean, they were not egregious calls. But somebody plants a quarterback on his ass way after the play is over and you don't throw the flag, you're standing right there. Again, suspiciously convenient lack of a flag.
Well, even – and to James Franklin's credit, when he said, hey, a face mask is a face mask, not much you can do about it, I thought they were good calls. The other personal foul I actually thought was a legitimate call, dumb play on the part of the Penn State player. I did get the chance to rewatch the game, the Big Ten in an hour, and on the kickoff play – where they had to find it in the replay, on the right side of the screen.
Oh, yeah. You know what? You're right. I'm sorry. That one was super soft. Yeah.
That one was ridiculous.
Yeah, that was absurd, which makes it all the more egregious that they did not flag the hit on Drew, which is the dude just threw him on the ground because he could. And because guy probably knew. That guy probably thought in his head the second he did it, look, I probably just gave him a free 15 yards.
Exactly. And I would have actually, on that play, I know a lot of Penn State fans don't want to hear this, but I actually kind of would have been okay with that one if they hadn't called the Penn State one on the kickoff, because the Penn State one was so ticky-tack.
Yeah.
I didn't really feel like the Oregon defender, picked him up and threw him to the ground. I almost felt like he lost his footing as he held him. Again, they could have very easily called the flag, put the flag down because it happened so late. But I could have gone along with it if you hadn't established earlier you're calling ticky-tack penalties.
I think that's very fair. Also, we baby quarterbacks in football now. I don't love that we do that, but let's just be consistent with it at least. And then, of course, you can't mention the complete lack of holding penalties, which is like, whatever. I mean, we've been talking about this for weeks now. Abdul Carter gets held on practically every play. But there was that moment in the Minnesota game where it got so unbelievably egregious that they threw 2 holding flags in a row, which is like flags than Penn State gets in 10 games. They got 2 of them in a row in the Minnesota game. Well, you could tell the officials were just like, okay, guys, look, we're not trying to call this, but you got to work a little bit harder. They're not so egregious about it. And the point is, Jim, they banned the hip drop tackle on defense in the NFL this year because it's dangerous.
Yes.
I probably don't want to be watching a nationally televised, again, conference championship game and seeing offensive linemen do it to our edge rushers. Like, this is the second time. You go back, there was a play where Abdul Carter got legit hip-dropped tackled by an offensive tackle. And that is the exact same play that blew out Alonzo Ford's knee at Minnesota 2 weeks ago. You got to stop that. I mean, that's ridiculous. I understand a little bit of holding. I understand that the Big Ten is never, ever going to call an offensive lineman for hooking his arm around an edge rusher's neck as he's going past him. You can't have the guys from behind dragging the edge rushers to the ground. I mean, it's just ridiculous. You got to throw that flag. Penn State should be clipping every one of those tapes and sending them to the league office.
And by the way, where you hear often, oh, they could call holding on every play. Well, the holding in the interior of the line of scrimmage, it's hard. There's so much crowd. But at the defensive end, when your guy is so fast as Abdul Carter is, he beats people. I mean, it is blatant. It's isolated. It's out there for the whole world to see. The fan in the upper deck could see that.
By the way, just to be clear, I'm not blaming any of this for the result of the game. Penn State lost that game because it couldn't play a lick of defense against Oregon's offense, which was great. I'm just saying it's obvious and it cheapens the quality of the product, and the conference ought to be embarrassed about that fact.
That's it. And, Chris, I'm done complaining about the officiating. We committed that segment to it. When we come back, we'll talk about the rest of the game.
With the postseason now coming into focus, excitement is building for a Nittany Lion appearance in the college football playoffs. Now's the time to start thinking of how to make your travel arrangements should the team advance to the playoffs to be held at four major bowl destinations over the New Year's holiday: LA, Phoenix, New Orleans, and Atlanta. Get in on all the playoff action with an all-inclusive bowl game travel package brought to you by State College-based Collegiate Athletic Travel, a national leader in sports fan travel for over 50 years. CAT's air-inclusive packages feature round-trip charter, air transportation from select Pennsylvania cities, deluxe hotel accommodations, airport and game transfers, pre-game meal and entertainment events, as well as game tickets, all under the supervision of CAT's seasoned event staff. Traveling on your own can still get in on the playoff action by selecting a land-only package that includes all features exclusive of air travel. Visit athletictravel.com in the coming days for complete details.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris, I'm Jim. It's quarter number three of our show. And you know what, Chris? With the playoff path now leading to Phoenix and the Fiesta Bowl, it's time to start planning your bowl game travel arrangements with State College-based Collegiate Athletic Travel. For over 50 years, they've been the go-to company for Penn State bowl trips. Their packages, it's air-inclusive, featuring round-trip air transport from Harrisburg, deluxe Scottsdale resort accommodations, airport and game transfers, pregame meal and entertainment events, as well as game tickets, all under the eye of the Collegiate Athletic Travel seasoned event staff, always on hand to make your bowl game travels memorable and carefree. If you're traveling to Phoenix on your own, not a problem. They can still get you into the playoff action by selecting a hotel-only package that includes all those other features exclusive of air travel. For complete details and pricing, which will be available later this week, in the meantime, you could go to athletictravel.com in the coming days for program updates or call 814-238-4987, and they come. Collegiate Athletic Travel, highly, highly recommended by Chris and by myself. All right, Chris, I'm done complaining about the officials, except for one last statement. Gary Danielson, I think, typically defends the officials. He plays, multiple times he pointed these issues out. So for him to point it out, pretty much that confirms that there was an issue there. All right.
Can I just point something out since you brought up Gary Danielson? So when the CBS Big Ten contract first came out, I thought it was pretty obvious that those guys had been doing SEC games for so long that they were having difficulty getting out of the mode of I'm an SEC homer because that's my employer's conference media partner. Right?
Yes.
And now I think it's also very evident, both when you see the NBC games, but especially when you see the CBS crew, when you see Nessler and Danielson, who we've been watching do college football forever and who've been SEC homers forever, God bless those guys. They are smart enough to have made the mental transition to say, like, oh, I get it now. Like, now we've got to be Big Ten homers. And they are. And they're actually pretty good at it. I'm not a big Gary Danielson fan, and I like the way he covered that game. And I am disgusted, Jim, at the fact that when I turn on ESPN or any ABC Disney sports product, I get Pravda levels of SEC propaganda. Like those guys, some of whom, like Herb Street and them, have been the most venerable voices in the sport for decades, just blithely lit their credibility entirely on fire last year in order to advocate for Alabama over Florida State, disregarding everything they had stood for, again, in some cases for 20 plus years, because that's what their employer required. That was where their financial bread was buttered. And they have no shame about it at all. Like, that is just the propaganda arm of the Southeastern Conference, which means Fox is supposed to be that for the Big Ten. And all I saw on the internets on Sunday was Joel Klatt taking a big old steamer all over Penn State. And I'm like, Joel, buddy, with friends like you guys, who needs enemies? Like, you're supposed to be our propaganda network. Where's our Pravda, Jim? That's what I want to know.
That's an excellent point. I hadn't thought about it that way. But you make the point, and it's valid. You got to consider the source. It's like when you watch TV news for politics, consider what network you're watching. You have to do that.
100%. It's MSNBC and Fox News, but for sports. And I hate it. It's terrible. It is terrible for coverage of the sport. You watch Kirk Herbstreit go on television now and talk about these playoff games. He looks like he's reading a hostage video. I kept expecting to see like a little red dot start pinging around around his forehead. So he says what he's supposed to be saying. I don't like it. I think it's terrible. I think it has cheapened and denigrated coverage of the sport in a terrible way that will get worse and worse as the years go by. But if we're going to do it, could we at least fight fire with fire? Could our propaganda arm not as shamelessly shill for our teams as ESPN does for the SEC? It's gross. So thanks very much. I never thought I'd find myself giving thanks for Brad Nessler and Gary Danielson, but those guys are pros. They know how to shill. And frankly, I think they're more entertaining shills than the shills on the Worldwide Leader.
Well, also with the Worldwide Leader, first of all, my news feed, I get a headline that says Paul Feinbaum gives his opinion on who should be in the playoffs. I'm like, I don't need to read this article.
Yeah, I'll give you three guesses. The first two don't count.
And if you're watching the on Sunday, the playoff show, and I'm gonna go off on my tangent here too, Chris. They go to Nick Saban. Nick Saban to ask him about SMU and Alabama and who should be in the playoff. Oh my God, Chris, I was shocked. Shocked, I tell you, when Nick Saban points out that Alabama had the tougher schedule. Hey, Nick, they lost to Vanderbilt. They got smoked by Oklahoma. You want to make the playoffs? Don't do that. It's not difficult. It's not difficult. So, yes, it is. It's awful, and now you got me wound up. Okay, so this is your fault. I'm blaming you on this. Watching that show when they promised us between 12 and 12:30 they would actually reveal it. My God, they wait till 12:29, and they just keep stalling to the point where Reese Davis actually admits, well, it may seem like I'm stalling here. Yes, yes, you are. It doesn't seem that way. It is, you are. It's a fact. You are stalling. And the way they did the reveal, you know, 1 through 4 and then start popping up, they managed to do every entry except the only one that everyone cared about, which was the number 11. Now, explain to me, Chris, how when there are 12 names to reveal, it's number 11 that you leave for last, okay? And as you put out 11 out of the 12 names, And it's time for that number 11 one. You stop to say, it appears like we're stalling on here. And I want to point out the committee, no matter which way they go. No, just give us the names. Then you can do your pontificating. Drives me absolutely crazy. And I remember in prior years, Chris, this show goes on for 4 hours. And they would take the full 4 hours to get to the other bowl games. And Penn State was like an hour 3:39 before you would find out what bowl game. And I'm sitting there for 3.5 hours waiting for this. Now I'll take a breath.
Yeah. Yeah, I think those are all fair criticisms. I mean, look, you and I both understand what it is. The advertisers paid a lot for the commercials that run during that first half hour. And from our perspective, why buy the cow if you can get the milk for free? Again, I understand it.
All right, let's move on. Let's talk about, forget the game. Let's talk about where Penn State ended up in the seeding here, Chris. And just real quick so people know, 1-4, Oregon, Georgia, Boise State, Arizona State get the byes. It's Texas versus Clemson, 5-12. 6-11 is Penn State SMU. 7-10 is Notre Dame, Indiana. 8-9 is Ohio State and Tennessee. Chris, looking at that, we'll set Penn State aside for a second. What matchup intrigues you the most?
Oh, in the first round, for sure, it's Tennessee at Ohio State. I'm not even sure it's that close.
It's Southeast Conference versus Big Ten.
And two of the great programs in the sport. So seeing and look, we've heard all this talk all this time about we want to see an SEC team come north and play a Big Ten team in the cold. That's it. I mean, that's the best matchup in terms of talent on the field, program history, and to have the SEC team coming out the South and coming up to Columbus, Ohio on December the 21st. That's everything you want in a college game.
Has Ohio State recovered from the Michigan game yet?
Boy, if I had to guess, I would say probably not. I bet there was a lot of internal angst, and I am not sure that Ryan Day is going to be able to refocus that team quickly enough. It's great that they're going to be at home from their perspective. I think that will help them. And as good as I think Tennessee is, I don't think I would feel like super comfortable relying on Nico Iomaliava at Columbus in those conditions and as inhospitable as the SHU is facing a talented defense as good as Ohio State. So I think I like the Buckeyes to win that one, whether he's got them totally even keeled or not. But it's for sure, I think, the best matchup of the first round.
And we've been talking all year. I know I have. I love this 12-team playoff. And I can't wait for all these games. I think they're going to be fantastic. But just one last thought on these conference championship games, which I've been saying forever, as everybody has. Waste of time. Why are we bothering? But it was such a great weekend of football, Chris. Georgia overtime, that Clemson finish was incredible. Does that change your mind at all about these conference championship games, or do you still think they should just skip them?
Well, yeah, I mean, I just don't love the concept. I never have. I will admit this was a good, entertaining weekend. That hasn't always been the case with conference championship games. Now that we see the committee has set the precedent that they're not going to punish teams for qualifying for conference championship game, I feel like it's a less urgent issue. But look, let's be honest. We may be happy that Alabama got left out, but it's also going to lead to Greg Sankey blowing this whole thing up like the Death Star.
I am confident he will do that. When we come back, Chris, I'm happy. I think you are. I think much of the world is happy SMU got in over Alabama. I'm going to ask you if it was the right call, though, when we come back.
With the postseason now coming into focus, excitement is building for a Nittany Lion appearance in the college football playoffs. Now's the time to start thinking of how to make your travel arrangements should the team advance to the playoffs to be held at four major bowl destinations over the New Year's holiday: LA, Phoenix, New Orleans, and Atlanta. Get in on all the playoff action with an all-inclusive bowl game travel package brought to you by State College-based Collegiate Athletic Travel, a national leader in sports fan travel for over 50 years. CAT's air-inclusive packages feature round-trip charter, air transportation from select Pennsylvania cities, deluxe hotel accommodations, airport and game transfers, pre-game meal and entertainment events, as well as game tickets, all under the supervision of CAT's seasoned event staff. Traveling on your own can still get in on the playoff action by selecting a land-only package that includes all features exclusive of air travel. Visit athletictravel.com in the coming days for complete details.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris, I'm Jim. It's quarter number four of our show. We're talking everything Penn State and college football. And Chris, I said as we closed out quarter number three, the tease was this. The big question, we knew where all 11 out of 12 teams were coming from for the playoffs. We knew the ACC championship game winner was in. We knew it was the Big 12 winner is in, loser is out. We knew both teams in the, you know, Big 10 and the Southeast Conference. We also knew Ohio State. We knew Tennessee. The question was going to come down to, if SMU loses to Clemson in a close game, it would be SMU versus Alabama. And I'll tell you what, for a while in that ACC game when Clemson was running away with it, I suspect everyone in the committee was just going, phew, that takes a big decision off our shoulders. Worst case scenario, SMU coming back but not winning, losing in that last second field goal. Did the committee get it right with SMU over Alabama?
100% they got it right. It is patently absurd to come to me and say that a team with three losses, two of which are to 500 teams that are only 500 because they beat you, one of them being Vanderbilt, for God's sake, when you were the number one team in the country, and the other one being a god-awful Oklahoma team that then went on to get its doors blown off by LSU the next week, and you couldn't even get in the end zone against that crappy team. Get out of here. Get out of here. And it's gross to me how far and quickly the Alabama fan base has fallen since Nick Saban left, because there was a time not so long ago, Jim, when they would have had the self-respect to go crawl off into a corner and shut their mouths. Three losses, and two of them were to 6-6 teams, and one of those 6-6 teams was Vanderbilt, for God's sake. Yeah, of course they got it right. And I don't want to hear about relative conference strength or any of this stuff. If the conference is so bad, if the ACC is so bad that a one-loss team in that conference doesn't even deserve to be in the playoff conversation, then kick them out. I don't want to have one foot in one world and one foot in the other, like it's a Simpsons episode where Homer Simpson keeps jumping between Australia and the United States, right? Like, either say, look, this is an SEC and Big Ten invitational because we think the Big 12 and the ACC are so terrible they don't even merit consideration, or say everybody's in, and if you don't like it, don't get housed by Oklahoma, who's terrible, in November. Sorry. It doesn't even seem like a controversial take to me.
And it shouldn't be, yet that's the take that we got, again, because of the propaganda. And I will point out one thing, and I think the playoff committee has gotten so much crap, criticism from every side, but there was a consistency to what they did. They had SMU like three places ahead of Alabama prior to the championship game, and they did not allow the championship game to knock SMU out. They did the same thing. I saw all kinds of arguments that Penn State would be seeded eighth, that Texas would be ahead of them, which I think is what happened and is legitimate, because Texas was ranked ahead of Penn State prior to these championship games.
Correct.
But they didn't bump Notre Dame ahead of Penn State nor Texas, and they didn't bump Ohio State ahead of Penn State. Oh, Penn State now has two losses. So does Ohio State, and Ohio State won head-to-head. They didn't do that. So there was a consistency to what the committee did, and I think they should be commended for it, Chris, which are words that they don't hear very often.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this committee did a really good job. I think they did something that other playoff committees in previous years have struggled to do, which is we adhere to an obviously internally consistent logic from the first poll they released all the way up to seeding the playoffs. I don't like the fact that there's no guarantee you can expect that next year or going forward. And of course, I hate the fact that it's all opaque with no transparency into the process. We should still see everything that goes on in the committee meetings. It should be an open book. It should be live streamed. But yeah, I thought they did a good job. And again, I thought they did the thing that was right for the health of the sport, not the bottom line of one media partner. Like, I think the bigger picture is that if large swaths of the viewing public come to view your sport's entire regular season and the process by which it selects a champion to be a transparent sham, that will actually be worse for the financial health long-term of your product than 1 year Alabama didn't make the playoffs.
I'm with you 100%. And they are such an easy target. I think they deserve praise when they get it right. They got it right. All right, let's talk about the path that Penn State has. And there's been a lot of talk that the number five seed is kind of the prime spot you want to be. So yep. Texas is in that spot. They get Clemson first. And if they win that game, they get Arizona State. Penn State, first round, gets SMU. If they win, it's then Arizona State. Who got the better draw, Penn State or Texas?
Well, it's important to keep in mind that in the preseason, when people looked at the way this bracket sets out, they assumed that given the field we're looking at, Jim, that Texas's path would have been Boise State and Clemson, because they assumed it would be the group of five team in the 12 spot and the lowest ranked Power Four conference champion in the four seed. And just because of the way this season went, it didn't work out that way. I think for sure. And listen, it's a 12 team playoff for the national championship. These are all good teams. They're all going to be challenging games. Okay. SMU is a very good offense. They got a lot of speed. Ashton Gentry's probably the best player in college football this year, in my opinion. So it's not to say these are easy games, all right? There's no FCS or MAC opponents. They're all going to be tough. But if I were to give you a choice of these paths, you could play SMU at home and then Boise State in the Fiesta Bowl. You can play Clemson at home and then Arizona State. Or you can host Tennessee and then go up against Oregon. Or excuse me, I'm sorry. Or you can play the winner of Tennessee, Ohio State, and then the winner of Arizona State versus Clemson or Texas. Which one would you pick, right? So not only is Penn State better off being the sixth seed than the five, honest to God, I think if you're looking at it objectively, you can probably say they got a better path than they would have had they prevailed in the Big Ten championship game. And that's not cope. I mean, I understand you're playing one extra game, and that's not to be taken lightly. But given the fact that it's going to be a hell of a lot of fun to have a party here in Happy Valley and host a playoff game in Beaver Stadium, I felt as good after a loss, after that Big Ten championship game versus Oregon and the way we fought back and the way we showed we belonged on the field with them as I have ever in my life.
Yes, which is why I started this show by saying they lost the game, but they won the seeding, because it's perfect for them and for Penn State fans Chris, from the time this 12-team playoff was a gleam in somebody's eye, that which would lead to a home playoff game, I've wanted a home playoff game.
Absolutely.
For Penn State.
I was dreaming of it.
And we got that dream come true. And as you pointed out, for a loss, I think we came away admiring this Penn State team. And like I said, I hate the, you know, the big game James criticism. I don't think he deserves criticism for this one. And I come away from it, like you said, feeling like this is a team that could be anybody in the tournament.
Now, when it's lose and go home, this is when the games really, truly matter. And now is the time to, as James would say, lock the F in.
Okay? Yes.
We got our path. We didn't get our pelt against number one. Kind of like we've learned with the wrestling team over the years. No one will care that you didn't win the Big Ten if you bring home the national title. And that is within Penn State's grasp. We can absolutely do it this year. That's where the challenge is. Do you think, Jim, based on the way they played in the Washington game and down the stretch, that that team learned some things from the loss to Ohio State, as did the coaching staff?
Oh, God, yes.
Well, I think this, I agree, and I think the same is going to be true about this game. And if there were going to be a time to learn those lessons so that going forward you can learn lessons from winning and put yourself in a position to take the whole thing, like, that was the time to do it. And I think as much as we learned about the team we all love to root for, I really believe, Jim, they learned some things about themselves and probably have some things on tape that they can now work on improving over the next few weeks.
No doubt about that. And I think there's a mindset now, Chris. We, watching it from the outside, can look at this and say, my God, they can play with anybody. Don't you think they're saying the same thing? We let that one get away.
No question.
And that's the number one team in the country.
Yep.
We had them. We had them, and we let them out of our grasp. All right, Chris, one more thing. It's going to be a noon game. And what's funny is I made the statement before I knew that. It's like, well, there's four games, four time slots, two night games, and a late afternoon slot, which is almost as good as a night game would get it for the whiteout. There's only one time slot that wouldn't be a nighttime, and that's a noon game. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't love it, obviously, but I'm over whatever mild disappointment I experienced. Here's the reality of it. Only Fox looks at the noon time slot as this great sacred time slot. Everybody else realizes that's where you put the stinker game. And so the trade-off of getting SMU as your opponent versus Alabama is that you're going to be playing at noon on TNT. And I'll take it.
My only question was, you'd think those people would want to who dealt with the television would say, we want a whiteout at night, you would think. All right, Chris, that's it. The show went fast. Thank you, Chris. Thank you all for listening. Make sure that you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
With the postseason now coming into focus, excitement is building for a Nittany Lion appearance in the college football playoffs. Now's the time to start thinking of how to make your travel arrangements should the team advance to the playoffs to be held at four major bowl destinations over the New Year's holiday: LA, Phoenix, New Orleans, and Atlanta. Get in on all the playoff action with an all-inclusive bowl game travel package brought to you by State College-based Collegiate Athletic Travel, a national leader in sports fan travel for over 50 years. CAT's air-inclusive packages feature round-trip charter, air transportation from select Pennsylvania cities, deluxe hotel accommodations, airport and game transfers, pre-game meal and entertainment events, as well as game tickets, all under the supervision of CAT's seasoned event staff. Traveling on your own can still get in on the playoff action by selecting a land-only package that includes all features exclusive of air travel. Visit athletictravel.com in the coming days for complete details.